This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where Bristol City's Famara Jeju takes the headlines in the Sky Bet Championship, receiving two cards in 20 minutes on his 28th birthday, one yellow, one red, and off. There were COVID outbreaks at Bristol Rovers and Sunderland in Sky Bet League One and at Stevenage in Sky Bet League Two, where after picking up just a single win in their first 15 matches, Southend United got two in a row, the second secured with the help of 36-year-old Greg Halford, signed on a one-month contract on the afternoon of the match and after over 18 months without a club. It's been one of those seasons. It's the official EFL podcast. Lee Hendry on the EFL and Mind Charity's new mental health team talk campaign, and Joby McEnough on all the key stories across the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two to come. But first, in just over 12 months from the bottom of the Championship to the cusp of the playoff places is the headline from Michael O'Neill's time in charge of Stoke City. But what's the detail? Let's ask the man himself. Whatever you were saying publicly at the time you took over, Michael, what sort of targets were you setting yourself? Which is a really subversive way of me trying to get it out of you exactly what the sort of long-term aims of the club are.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, coming into the situation as it was and the club in the at the bottom of the table, and, you know, when you're at the bottom of the table, particularly when you know that's not what the plan has been, and the club had, you know, I think probably I think you may find it difficult to find another club that has invested as much in the period that we've been in the Championship, for example, and not seen, unfortunately, the return of that. It was a difficult situation that we walked into. And the priority initially was to change the initial situation, and when you're bottom of the league, it's to make sure you don't finish in the bottom three. And it was tough, you know, I have to be honest. I thought from the outside looking in with how the score looked on paper, it wouldn't be as tough as it was, but that was without knowing the league and the how difficult it is to get consistency in this league and to win games in this league. And having managed that, obviously, I think the second part of that was then try to build a team to be at the other end of the table. And, you know, so far we've managed to do that. We're relatively happy with where we are this season. But it's been a tough 12 months, a lot of change at the club, and a lot more change still to implement as well. But in terms of the squad and where we would like to see the squad evolve to, but as I say, it's a constant challenge.
Do you stick quite rigidly to personal principles when you're trying to build a team culture and sort of general format? Or do you have to be flexible to try and take the key ingredients from what you inherit and then gradually morph it from there? What comes first?
I think you have to, a little bit of both. I think ideally, you know, you're right, the key principles of the human quality of the players is very important to me. And we had a lot of good lads in our squad, there's no doubt of that. I think we had a lot of disillusioned players as well who maybe had come to the club. It hadn't been a particularly productive time for them. In some cases, you know, I was their third or their fourth manager and they'd been at the club possibly only 18 months. So that in itself can be difficult for players, and I understand that. But it was a constant shaping of the squad. We felt that the numbers were obviously too high. But, you know, everyone, that the most difficult thing at times is to get players out of your football club who you don't feel are the right types, or it's not worked out for them. And it's never just the player's fault, to be honest. The player, you know, gets criticised for their contribution at times, but I think in general, everyone plays a part in that. The manager that brings them to the club itself, because there's obviously been an integration problem, I think, in some of the players that we've brought to the club as well. And so, you know, what we found is, you know, players who were on very good contracts for the Championship with considerable time left on their contract. So there's a bit of tolerance needed as well with certain players. And my job is to get the best out of what we had and add to it. And you know, I think we've had two transfer windows, and that's what our aim has been, to be honest. We've spent very little money, but to get a better group of lads that can push the club forward.
Sounds as though you're painting a picture of a lot of your time being man management rather than delivering tactical acumen, or, well, obviously a combination of the two, Michael, but sounds as though there's a hell of a lot, because if you get one of those relationships with, say, a high earner you can't get off the books wrong, it can have an impact right across the whole dressing room and further across the whole club, can't it?
Yeah, it can do. And you know, we were in a situation where we've had players who have gone out on loan, for example, that the club had bought in the Premier League. You know, the loan maybe hasn't been successful, or it hasn't become permanent, so the club, that player then returns to the club. So you're actually trying to move the club forward, and then players are returning to the club who have left the club, and it's very difficult to move the club forward with that kind of player, to be honest, because I think once you leave on loan, unless you're a young player and it's part of your development process, then you're leaving to look for a new challenge and a new opportunity. And let's be honest, you're only back here because that opportunity or that challenge has not worked out as you'd hoped it had. So there's that constant sort of challenge of players coming back to the building, players leaving. And then equally, you know, adding the one or two players that we've been able to do. But most of our work has been done on trimming the squad. More players have left since we came through the door than we've added. And the important thing was, in the summer, we weren't in a position like where we were going to be able to spend money like a lot of other clubs. So we signed four free agents and invested some money in Jacob Brown. The previous window, it was the same. We invested money in Jordan Thompson. So we've been quite select when we've had to spend money. But the most important thing has been sort of balancing the books and trying to generate, I suppose, money out of the squad we have to then reinvest into the squad as well.
Have you had the odd happy surprise in there as well? Maybe somebody that you thought, not sure whether they're going to be my sort of player, or might not have heard good thing, or for whatever reason, then you suddenly find that, oh, wow, that's worked out rather nicely.
We've had a few of those, to be honest. I think, you know, when I look through the squad, I think when we came to the club, you know, Jordan Cousins was probably in that category. He wasn't around the team very much, and he came in and did a good job for us last year. His game time has been somewhat limited this year, but in the last four or five games, he's come in and done well again. Josh Tymon was a lad that was basically, you know, we signed in the Premier League, and young player, and I think has fallen through the cracks a little bit with various managers, and has contributed quite a bit this season as well in a variety of positions. Tyrese, obviously, when I came to the club, we felt we were losing Tyrese. You know,
this is Tyrese Campbell, for anybody that hasn't worked it out.
You know, clearly, because of the nature of his contract, was very attractive for a cross-border option to the likes of a Celtic or a Rangers. But we managed to persuade him that his long-term future lay at Stoke, and he's been fantastic for us pre-injury, and obviously a big miss for us, but we'll get him back. And I think all the younger ones have been great. You know, Harry Souter coming back from Fleetwood, Nathan Collins, they've all had a significant contribution this year, and even just in recent times. You know, Joe Bursick coming back after being on loan at Doncaster, you know, I think that's five clean sheets in eight games. So all of those have been real big positives, because in the first few months of the job, it was very difficult for us to even get the younger players training with the squad because the numbers were as high.
You brought clean sheets up, so I want to mention this, because you've had 10 in 19. And I wondered whether there's a sort of misnomer about sort of clean sheets. Because remember, we had Aita Karanka on where you were a couple of months ago. And as soon as I mentioned clean sheets, when Aita loves a clean sheet, he got quite defensive. And, well, we're not negative, you know, we're trying to be expansive, blah, blah, blah. Is it not just the obvious, as in if you keep a clean sheet, you only need to score one goal? But actually, does that help team culture, that sort of solidity, does that help to grow confidence across the whole squad as well? I think there was a question in there, Michael. I don't know if you got it.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. It definitely does. I mean, if you look at us, you know, our back four in recent weeks has been Collins, Souter, Chester and Fox. Two of the players we brought as free agents to the club, have essentially come through, and a young goalkeeper in Joe Bursick. So all of that grows develops confidence in those players. It develops confidence in the team. And we up until probably the last two or three games, we were one of the highest scoring teams in the league as well. But we had conceded, despite the number of clean sheets, we had conceded far too many goals. So what we were tending to find in certain games, we were conceding, you know, twos and threes, and then we would have a clean sheet. But ultimately, in the balance of things, it probably you probably gather more points in that type of fashion. And you know, I think we've always scored goals. I think last season, you know, in the period we're in from November to the end of the season, I think only possibly Leeds and Brentford scored more goals than we did. So that side of the ability to score goals has been in the team, and I suppose we're still in that transition process of marrying the two in a little bit more harmony to get more points on the board.
Now, we have got pictures between us as we have this chat, and I'm pleased to note you're looking about the same as you did when I last saw you about a year ago. Listen, I've been doing the maths. I've had my shoes and socks off. You've had eight games in the last 25 days. You've got five to come in the next 18. I can't help but think of the contrast in your lifestyle. I assume as an international manager, you're almost establishing your own routines, whereas this, I mean, mate, do you get room to think? I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a real challenge. Last season, to be honest, I found it even a challenge up until March. And then when we came back after lockdown, at least we had the benefit of obviously playing through nicer weather and through the summer, and the training days were nicer. But since we've come back in, really, you know, we had a good pre-season. We weren't able to go too far. We had a small five-day camp in Belfast that the boat players enjoyed. And they really, since that, it's been a game every 3 days. I think we've had 1 week where we had a full training week, which was, but not with the full squad, which was in one of the international breaks. And I don't know how long it took me to amass 50 international games, but it was a lot longer than the 12 months that I've spent in this job. So it is a very different, you know, one of the challenges, I think, as an international manager is establishing that routine as well. Whereas here, you don't have to worry about that. You know, you just got, who do we play next? And in the current schedule, you're like, what day of the week is it really? And getting ready for the next game 3 days later, to be honest.
Now, listen, with the fixture congestion, you made a rod for your own back by reaching the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup as well. You've got Spurs looming. At this point, as much as your priority is to get out of the Championship, at this point, with so few bits of silverware to be gained by players and managers, do you just have to go for it and hope you might be able to pull off one or two surprises at this stage? Give it your absolute all?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we initially used the competition to integrate some of the younger players, the likes of Collins and Suter, and really through the Carabao Cup games, they then came through and established themselves in the league team as well. So it was a very worthwhile competition. And then, you know, we went away and won at Wolves against a very good Wolves team that night, and we had a lot of younger players in the team, and obviously won away at Villa as well. And I think once you get to this stage of the competition, you know, you have to give out everything, or else you may as well have gone out in the first round, really. And it's a very difficult, it's a shame we're not playing, you know, a full bet 3-6-5, and, you know, Tottenham coming up in a great run of form and having a great start to the season. And but we have to try and make it as difficult as we can for them, and we have to, you know, believe we can, you know, take another Premier League scalp. It's a huge ask, but the competition has been good for us. I think you're right. You know, the cup competitions, it's difficult, and particularly in a truncated season as we're playing in now, to give them your full attention. But as I say, the four games we've had in the cup have been positives for us, because on top of that, we kept four clean sheets. So we'll be aiming for the same again on Wednesday night.
And it's the halfway point in the season on the 2nd of January. Are we any further forward? Are we any clearer as to who the favourites are? And you know, I guess you would say you're amongst the contenders with the position you've currently got into?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think we had a really strong position possibly 3 weeks or maybe even three, four games ago, to be honest. And then, unfortunately, we lost some players with injury, you know, which John Obi's been out, you know, Angus Gunn and Adam Davis, both goalkeepers, were out. You know, we're still waiting on the return of Joe Allen. Ryan Shawcross is still, you know, getting closer and closer to coming back. So we would like to think that, you know, as long as we hang into that position where we're within touching distance of the top six, that if we can get the squad stronger with the players to come back, that we can put a real strong second half of the season together. For me, I think the teams that come down are always going to be the strongest. We played very well at Watford and were unlucky to lose 3-2. But the most encouraging thing for me is any of the games that we've lost, we've been in the game. You know, we've not been outplayed by any of the top teams. We managed to come back against Norwich when we had a difficult first half of the game. And, you know, I think as we continue, we just want to make sure that we don't, our position, we can maintain this position. And as I say, push and have a strong second half of the season and push into the top six.
Pleasure as always, Michael. Great to see you.
Cheers, Glenn.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
This week, the EFL and the Mind charity launched their Team Talk campaign. It coincides with Mind releasing their 10-year report on men's mental health, looking at how things have changed over the past decade. Findings include 2 in 5 men now admit to regularly feeling worried or low. Over a third say social media has a negative impact on how they feel. 23% worry about their appearance. Men are more likely to use unhealthy coping mechanisms than women and are 3 times more likely to see a therapist than they were in 2009. This comes at a time, of course, when 60% of adults and over 2/3 of young people felt their mental health had deteriorated during the coronavirus pandemic and lockdown. The Team Talk campaign aims to combat the loneliness and isolation football supporters have felt, with so few of them having been able to experience the camaraderie and release that the game brings. The EFL and its 72 clubs are holding Team Talk sessions between now and the end of January, and the idea is to encourage supporters to talk, to discuss their team's performance, to get something a bit more personal off their chest, or simply just grab a cuppa and listen to the conversation. These sessions will be either virtual or in person where it's safe to do so. We can talk to the former Aston Villa and England midfielder Lee Hendry, who has courageously been very open about his own struggles with depression. I mean, I can see, therefore, why this campaign is one that's true to your heart, Lee.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's, first and foremost, I think it's a fabulous idea. I really do. I just think that, you know, you've hit the nail on the head, and I think it's pretty evident to everyone the way things are at the moment and the way it has been the past 10, 12 months or so. It's been really, really difficult. But yes, you know, something that really is close to my heart, and you know, it's took me a while to sort of come forward and actually be open about my situation. And in a way, in a big way, it showed how rewarding it's been. And that's been through what I've just sort of come across and been quite honest with my situation of how things unfolded and how things ended up being quite, well, in the terms of really, really difficult. So I can understand on every level. And it's been great to interact with people and actually give my side of how things were and how life is. You know, we're all human at the end of the day, so it's really close to me.
I mean, Lee, if you are feeling a little bit blue today, you've given us no indication at all. I mean, is this a constant struggle for you? Is it something you've learned to manage? And I'm sure if it is, it's something that everybody will want to hear how you managed to master it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with me, and I think, I think lots of men and lots of people, not just men, really, you know, people, you know, overall just, you know, they go through stages. I mean, I'm one of these people, to be honest, and, you know, you judge people, you know, it's just the way of life. And, you know, I'll always bounce around with a big smile on my face and I'll try and hide the fact of, you know, that everything's good and everything's going well. And do you know what? That's just me. I'll go home, you know, I could have this conversation with you guys and have a great crack and a laugh and a joke. And then, you know, I could go and sit in the bedroom and not come out of there for 3-4 hours. So, you know, it's putting on that brave face, as many men do, to be honest, particularly, you know, and that's not just saying it because I'm a man, but, you know, I think sometimes men sort of carry the weight of everything, the weight of the world on their shoulders at times. And, I think that's just being a proud man and speaking for men alone, is that sometimes you do feel good, and then other times I still go through it at this stage, and particularly over the last 10 months I have, it's been a really, really testing fact for me. And like I said, I can put this face on and then I can take it off after coming off and speaking to you guys at times. And sometimes that's probably the worst things that you can do. I've learned a lot that putting it on and then sort of going back to that situation, you're not giving the right vibes off. I think talking and trying to go about your life in a positive way has always been difficult for me over the years. And I've learned a hell of a lot through the situations that I put me and my family through. So, the blue faces and the smiley faces at times, I think there's lots of men and women go out there and put them on to go to work, and deep down sometimes they're carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders.
And just to take the role for a second of those that might be trying to support somebody that is struggling, I don't know whether it's possible for you to describe what you're feeling when you might go in that room and shut the door for 3 or 4 days, and what kind of level of understanding you might want from a supportive family member or friend.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because it's a difficult circumstance to approach. Some certain people don't like the fact of having people coming round them and sort of making it a bigger issue, because it is a big issue and it is a big problem. And the problem is, a lot of the time when you do go through these situations where you do lock yourself away, is that's when you're not addressing things, that's when you're building things up and you're letting things get to you. It's getting to a situation where you are thinking of nothing more of how you can get out of that situation. And like many people do, they build it up and build it up, and the inevitable happens, and that's the unfortunate thing is, and that's why this is where, as people that have been in around me, my family witness when I'm sort of in a bit of a situation, or I'm low and down, because it takes me a while to get out of bed. I'll be very quiet and subdued compared to what my usual self is. So it is, from the outside looking into someone being into a situation, it's noticing them facts, and they'll stand out a million miles. They really will, because you'll know a person inside and out if you're close to them, and it's just how you address them things. It's a very sensitive subject. It's a very sensitive situation to even approach, but take small steps if you're trying to find out what them situations are, because I can assure you not everyone will want to come forward and tell you that they are feeling down and depressed and anxious and all the rest of it. But some people will like the fact that approaching the situation might just give them that little bit of a kick up the backside to actually address how they're feeling, because I don't care what anyone says. We all have problems. We all have situations that we go through. We all worry. The anxiety hits alone, different people, high and low. But I tell you what, to have a conversation with someone who you feel comfortable with and you can address them problems, trust me, it's half the battle, and it make you feel like that problem or them problems that you have certainly will feel that there are problems shared. And I'm pretty sure whoever you're speaking to, whoever's addressing it, will realise that and will certainly want to help you going forward, because it's a place that you don't want to be in, and it's certainly a place that you don't want to shove stuff under the carpet and think it'll go away, because it won't go away. I can assure you of that. It'll only get worse. So I feel talking, for me, is probably the best solution, because you hide the situations and the facts that you are struggling, and I tell you, it'll mount and mount and mount like everything else does.
So if we've got somebody listening who might attend one of these sessions with their local club and they are listening to another party, is it a matter of gentle probing and looking for an in to try and encourage the individual to speak? And do you remember the moment when you were first willing to let out your issues, and also the sense of relief that you felt that it was a problem shared and not something that you just had to shield from everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, just off the last question you asked me about, you know, me actually speaking it, I kind of felt that whoever I spoke to is not going to help me. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who I speak to. My problems are not going to get resolved. They're not going to go away. I've got to deal with this myself. And I'm telling you now, everyone will feel that way if they feel the way that and it's the way of the world, because I just feel that being proud and, you know, people paint pictures of you, people look at you and think that you're this and you're that, and it's not always the way, you know. Life doesn't move smoothly. We know that, you know, you'll always come across things that stumble across you. But talking, when I first tried to talk, it took me maybe two or three occasions to do it. And I went to try and go and speak to someone professionally. And that was because my situation was, you know, I got to a situation where I did try and take my own life a number of occasions, because I just felt that was the easiest way out. Well, it's not the easiest way out at all, because what you're doing is you're leaving everything behind. You're leaving people to pick up all the pieces that you've left, the mess that you've left, you know, the hurt, the families that you're hurting, you know, your children. There's so much that you need to think about regarding that. But when I first went to go and speak to someone professionally, I literally turned up there and I turned away, because I thought, I'm not going in there. I'm not going to speak to someone I don't know about my problems. And I actually lied to my wife and said, yeah, I went. It was really good, really helpful. And she said, oh, when's your next one? And I said, they've said that I don't really have to go back. They've sort of, so I was lying again. So I was hiding. I was tucking everything under the carpet, if you like. And I had a letter come through the door saying that I didn't attend my appointment. And well, as you can imagine, you know, it made matters worse at home then, because I was lying. I wasn't telling the truth. I wasn't trying to address what my problem was. So I had to go again, and it was probably the best thing I did. I'm not going to sit here and lie about it, because, you know, there's problems that I probably didn't want to address to my partner, my mom, my dad. But to speak to someone who understood what and where I was going, yes, it was upsetting. It was hard. It was difficult. Everything that you can imagine. But do you know what? I came out there and I remember being in there for quite some time, and I was in tears. I was, you know, a lot of emotion was released, a lot of tension, a lot of pressure. And it made me feel better. It made me feel good. It made me feel like I'm addressing what I'm actually going through. And I felt proud of myself for doing it. I really did. Not that I could ever say that I would have, because I felt that I could take the world on myself. And there's not a chance in this world you can do that. You need to go and speak to people. And whether it's someone professionally, whether it's someone you can trust, or it's someone that you can relate to, who are going to understand the facts that you're going through a tough time.
Are you having a bad day, and is this helping?
Yeah, I mean, not today. I mean, I've got to say, the past week, I have found things really quite tough, and you know that's another thing. I heard you talk about the social media thing, and you know, my work is based around social media. It's about, you know, I am in the public eye, and I do read things and I do look at things, and it's difficult. You know, there's things that I read when I'm doing work, because the problem is, I think a lot of the situation is based on work in my eyes, is that, you know, I want to be the best at what I want to do. I want to try and get better at things. And, you know, I sometimes read social media posts, and I shouldn't do it, but it I can't help it. You know, I want to see what response, because there's good response, there's bad response. And, you know, last week I felt that I'd sort of had a bad game, and I didn't really have a bad game, but I felt in my eyes I did, and it made me feel really down and low. Obviously, the current situation, we're in lockdown, and I just felt that, you know, I had nowhere to go. I felt that, you know, my friends weren't around, You know, the usual side of it is that sometimes you can get over things is when you can get out and have a little bit of a social gathering. You can go and play golf. You can go and do things with your pals and stuff. And that's probably been the hardest thing, I think, over this period of time with COVID. It has been, I mean, very up and down sort of period for me. Not to the stage where I felt as low as what I did back in the time where I did try and take my life. But, you know, I have thought about things past then. And when I have to go back to that situation, it means that I'm getting back to a situation where I'm feeling low and down. And that's just down, I'm putting it down to the whole current climate of what we're going through as a world pandemic. It's brutal. It's horrible. But, you know, sometimes I have to get up and go down and see my kids, look at them and think to myself, you know, what would I do or what would they do if I wasn't here to be around them? And, you know, we're all going through this situation. How can we help each other? And I do find that I'm finding myself on the phone a little bit more talking, probably not even about my situation, but talking and talking about my work, which is, you know, is my bread and butter at the moment. So that's giving me that little bit of release. But I'm not going to lie, you know, I've sat in bed last week for 3 or 4 hours and not got up. And, you know, that they're the times where it does dawn on you that, you know, this is a problem, and you have to try and get over these little hurdles, because there's hurdles that you will face. That's for sure.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, I thanks for sharing your experiences. Thanks for sharing that even though you've maybe passed that cliff top drama, these are still feelings you have on a day-to-day basis, because it's relatable to the listeners of the Official EFL podcast, to supporters of clubs. And I guess our message here is, if you can attend one of the team talk sessions, get in touch with your local club, look on the EFL website, try and attend, whether it's virtually or if you're in a lower tier, go and attend in person. But I guess you're just helping that realization that maybe pick up the telephone, something as simple as that. Have a chat with a friend, even if it's not on topic of what's concerning you, Lee. Just the act of interacting can make you feel that little bit better.
Yeah, it can, because there might be a conversation that you know, someone just might make you feel better in that day, and it might make you give you a little bit of a pickup. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we go out and we do things. I mean, one big release for me is I play a lot of golf, and, you know, just happens to be that the weather's been horrific over the last week or so. And, you know, the golf course has been shut, which is just, you know, when you feel like it's all mounting on you, and then I'm finding myself, what can I do? And it's trying to occupy your mind and trying to have that mindset is where you're not getting into a rut of sitting there and thinking, oh, I've got to do this. I've got this coming up. I've got the bills to pay. I've got the, because that's one thing is that it's difficult when you sit, and when you start sitting and thinking and letting it prolong in your mind, it's honestly, the mind's a terrible place at times. But, you know, it's when you have a conversation, it can be as simple as that, is that, you know, even go for a walk. Exercise is massive. I find, you know, if I'm having a really bad day, I'll get up and put my tracksuit on, put my music on, and I come back and I feel on top of the world again. It's crazy. And it doesn't mean I have to run to do a certain time. It's just getting my nice bit of music on that I enjoy. And it's crazy. Honestly, little things like that are so productive in the way forward.
Keep fighting, Lee. We appreciate you sharing your story. And if you are interested, then look on the EFL's website, look on Mind's website, check out your club website, or even get in touch with your club direct and see how they're participating in the Team Talk campaign. Good to talk to you, Lee. I'm sorry it's about such a challenging subject.
Thank you.
This is the Official EFL podcast.
Let's round things off this week in the company of player coach at Leighton Orient and an integral part of Sky Sports coverage of the EFL, Joby McEnough. And there's one word I have to say once again, Joby, and it is the word COVID, because Sunderland, Bristol Rovers and Stevenage all are either in the middle of or about to have games postponed because the pandemic has swept through their respective camps. I mean, as one of the pioneers in this area, Leighton Orient, Do you want to just share with us again? We probably touched on it when you were generous enough to join us last time. Do you want to just share with us what it is like when one or two positive tests come back and then it kind of sweeps through the camp and effectively wipes out everything that's planned?
Yeah, again, it's obviously very difficult, very disruptive. I think the big problem with it is it's not just about people coming in with a bad cough or not feeling great. There were a large amount of cases, certainly at our place, with players that were asymptomatic. I had hardly anything at all, you know, towards probably the middle part of it, a little bit of fatigue, but certainly that was it. You know, so in terms of it spreading, I think that's probably why it does, once it gets in, it spreads quick, because we are in contact. We're not obviously a workplace that can keep social distance. And unfortunately, when you have that contact that we do, you know, it can spread like wildfire. It is difficult because you're off at home. Of course, you have to self-isolate. So again, from a working point of view, it's impossible. But even getting back after the isolation period, you've got lads that, I mean, we had to play a game off the back of effectively one day's training in 2 weeks, you know, because we'd missed a few games. Again, we had to go back and fulfill the fixture. So I think there can be a little bit greater understanding, if I'm being honest. It is something that unfortunately is going to be inevitable in the times that we're living in. Clubs are doing everything they can to stop the spread. Again, for us, for example, we travelled, we're using two coaches, you know, as much as we can. We're masked around the training ground. If we're in a meeting, you know, it's again socially distant. So clubs are doing all they can. Unfortunately, there is going to be cases, and again, for us, I suppose all we're asking for is a bit more understanding, possibly when it does happen, you know, because everyone is trying their best.
What about team culture, which is such an important part of a successful club? I mean, you know, different factions going on different coaches. I mean, do you muddle them up so that there's not two sort of cliques there, and, you know, the sort of relationships that might have been formed of sort of car share clubs because people are from a certain area and spend three quarters of an hour together in and out, and yeah, the bonds are, I mean, how do you possibly replace that?
Well, you can't, Clem, and I think that's been, again, a big issue moving forward. Again, that social element, the team bonding, the being together, whether it is sharing a car in. Again, particularly at our level, where you're probably going to see it a little bit more in League 2, League 1, maybe a group of players that, you know, live a little bit further away that come in together. Again, team coaches, so we've split ours up this year a number of different ways. You know, we'd have one probably main coach that we try and get the bulk of the players on within reason, and obviously with the right numbers, and then the staff would maybe go in a smaller coach. So, you know, again, hotels, we're in our rooms, you know, you're going down for your breakfast, picking your breakfast up, then going back into your room. So you're not having that interaction that you normally do on away trips. So, you know, it has been difficult, but listen, we understand we're in a situation that everyone's trying to get to grips with. We're very fortunate that we can still play. We can still go and train. And although it's not ideal, we're just grateful for that. And I think everyone's just trying to still make the most of it and still get to grips with it, you know, after what has been quite a long time. But, you know, we're all trying our best.
So in the Skybet Championship, two wins in a week for Norwich City and Bournemouth, and Wayne Rooney got his first home win, Derby's first home win of the season, 10 points from 8. I get with that 2-0 win over Swansea City. I mean, you watched both the midweek games back to back. Derby, first of all, is Wayne Rooney surprising us? Clean sheets, you know, not losing as a priority, as opposed to we might have thought as a former premium striker, it would be all out attack.
Yeah, you could think that. I think what he has done, and with all his footballing experience, what you would expect, along with, you know, some fantastic support, it must be said, the likes of Liam Rosinha, of course, who's done a fantastic job there on the coaching staff. They've recognised what needed sorting out. You know, they were, for me, way too open under Philip Cocu. They wanted to play, they wanted to be expansive, which is great, but they were just conceding far too many goals, particularly on the counter-attack where they were so open. They were, for me, a little bit too expansive and weren't able to recover. So I think that's the first thing he's really addressed, having seen Derby, you know, the last few games. You know, he's made them a lot more solid, a lot harder to beat. And ultimately, that's what you have to start with, whether you're a striker or a goalkeeper. It doesn't matter. You have to get your team able to get results. And that's been the real first port of call for him. He's really steadied the ship. You know, I think it's 6 games unbeaten now, only three goals conceded, 4 clean sheets in that. So, you know, that's been the first thing. An interest in listening to Wayne Rooney in his press conferences, you know, talking about, I want the strikers now to start scoring goals. And it was great to see Kazim Richards get off the, get on the score sheet last night. And again, having Wayne Rooney there as your gaffer, as a striker, you know, there can be no better person to give you those tips and maybe start again adding those layers onto what has been a real good defensive unit to start with. And now if they can start adding the goals, which they did last night, you know, I thought they were actually fantastic. You know, all areas of the pitch, the three boys in midfield were fantastic. The boys at the back defended absolutely brilliantly, particularly in that second half where Swansea had a little bit more of the ball. But, you know, real encouraging signs. And I think he's had that switch in his head now to say, I want to make a go of it. He's obviously stopped playing. He's stopped training. And I think you have to give it 100% focus. It's a real tough job. And, you know, he's making a very, very good fist of management at the moment.
Yeah. And the prospective new owners, when they come in, must be watching. Maybe in their heads they had a plan for who was going to become coach, but maybe their opinion is being changed by what's being achieved. Norwich starting to look like the real deal for you? Just seem to have that machine-like quality that they did when they won the title 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed with them last night for large parts of the game, and as I have been the whole season, really. And, you know, I'm a big advocate, especially for teams that go up, you know, from the Championship. For me, you know, they weren't good enough to stay up. I don't think that's being disrespectful. I think sometimes we had it at Reading, you know, we went up, probably didn't add the amount of quality that we needed to compete at that level, especially that first year, which is key in terms of building and establishing yourself in the Premier League.
Is that a frustration, Joby? Do the squad discuss that? Because I often think promotion's got obsolescence built in. Big word for a early morning call that we're doing at this podcast. Thank you very much. But, you know, I often think, you know, what's not talked about is there's this giant rush towards promotion. Everybody celebrates wildly, and then 3 days later, half the team get sort of canned off. But when you get the reverse of that and they stick with everybody and don't bring big numbers in, is everybody irritated by that?
Yeah, there is a frustration. Of course there is, because you've worked so hard to get up and you want to have the best chance of staying up, you know. But listen, clubs have got their way of doing things. You know, you look at the way Fulham went a few years ago and went completely the opposite and spent, you know, an awful lot of money and brought an awful lot of players in, and it wasn't successful. And you look at other clubs that maybe haven't gone to that extreme and managed to survive. But, you know, I think with all due respect to Norwich last year, you know, it was a tough season for them. You know, they've stuck with Daniel Farker, who I believe, you know, has done a great job at that football club, deserves the opportunity to try and get them back up. You know, there's nobody better than him. You know, he knows the league, he knows the club inside out now. And, you know, clearly that's paying dividends this season, and it's certainly a model I would like to see followed. I've got great sympathy with Slaven Bilic, obviously just lost his job at West Brom. Mm. You know, ultimately it's probably, you know, squads sometimes that are just not quite good enough, and they deserve the opportunity to try and get back up and build again. A bit like Burnley, you know, they did a similar thing with going up, came down, kept Sean Dyche, and then the second time of asking, with that experience from, you know, the first stint in the Premier League, they've been able to go and build, you know, and really stabilise themselves as a Premier League football club. So I'm impressed with Norwich. I've got to be honest, they're certainly one of my favourites. Real strength in depth. When you saw what was on the bench, Todd Cantwell coming on, Alex Tete, you know, being able to get a rest, you know, that is going to be massive. This season, more than ever, with the increased congestion, it's going to be about the squads for me. And they certainly have got, you know, one of the strongest squads in the Championship.
Huge game at the bottom as well, Joby. Forest came out on top against Sheffield Wednesday. Let's deal with Wednesday first. Tony Pulis, 3 points from 24. I mean, you know, he's offered new contracts to his kind of stalwarts, Barry Bannon, Tom Lees, Adam Reach. That's fine. But he needs to start putting points on the board, and sharpish, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it was always going to be a big job. I think from a mentality point of view, that's probably the hardest job at that football club is trying to get into the players' minds that, you know, they have still got a chance of survival.
Some great fixtures in the Championship this weekend. Friday night's Preston at home to Bristol City have slipped to ninth. The early kickoff on Saturday is Norwich at home to Cardiff, who've won five of their last six. Birmingham Middlesbrough sees Ita Karanka against one of his former teams. Brentford unbeaten in 12 against Reading. Watford are at Huddersfield. Bournemouth at Luton. Bit of a battle down the bottom there. We've had the derby chat, but Rotherham getting sucked right in there. Entertain Wayne Rooney's team, and actually Wickham against QPR. QPR getting a little bit too close for comfort as well. Into League One, double defeats for Hull City and Lincoln City, both of whom suffered defeat at the hands of Shrewsbury Town. Double away wins for them. The Steve Cotterill effect is immediate, Joby.
Yeah, again, you know, another manager who has certainly been there, done it, got the T-shirt. You know, and I think from his point of view, knowing what he's like, his enthusiasm for the game will certainly rub off on those players at Shrewsbury. And, you know, obviously a couple of big wins to just give them a little bit of momentum, give them a little bit of a chink of light. You know, they're only 1 point now from getting out that relegation zone. And again, psychologically, it's massive, you know, just to have a little bit of a mini target in reach. And I'm sure that'll be, you know, the first aim of everyone at that football club is getting out that relegation zone. And once you do that, it's about staying out. So, you know, obviously a chance for them to do that. And again, I think they're certainly moving in the right direction under Steve Cotterill.
Albeit their momentum slowed by the fact that their game was against Sunderland this coming weekend, who, as we've already discussed, have had to have that one postponed. Bristol Rovers Oxford has gone the journey as well. I mean, again, some great games in League One this weekend. Friday night, first v second, Hull, who've lost their last two, against Portsmouth. And then on Saturday, it's Peterborough in third against Ipswich in fifth. Lincoln travel to Northampton. Doncaster, who are in sixth, travel to one of Darren Moore's former clubs, Burton Albion, of course, propping up the table as things stand at the moment. In League Two, the top two, Newport County and Cheltenham Town, both picked up just a point from their two games. Newport County, because a certain somebody's team managed to beat them. One of those real highs, I guess, going back in that dressing room after that, when you've not quite knocked Newport County off their perch in terms of they're still top, but certainly a great sort of confidence builder to beat the leading team.
Yeah, massive shot in the arm for everyone at the football club. And I think for me, you know, being around it and having a look at the league for a couple of years now, it should be one that gives us real belief, you know, as players, as a football club, of what we can do and where we can get to. You know, we certainly feel, as we have shown, you know, we can beat anybody. At the moment, from our point of view, we can also lose to anybody. So that's the big thing for us, is that consistency. You know, again, having the fans there, and, you know, they help get us over the line. You know, you can't legislate for, you know, that boost that they give you, you know, in certain times of the game, you know, that feeling of scoring and getting that roar. And certainly it was great for them. You know, if so far the only league game they've been able to get into was, you know, a win against the table toppers. But yeah, listen, we're in a good place. Really disappointing result against Morecambe on Tuesday. I haven't started really well. And again, for us, if we are to achieve what we want, and that's getting in the playoffs, you know, as a minimum, you know, they're the type of games that we need to take points in, because we certainly feel, you know, we're good enough to compete with anybody.
Talking of trips to the higher northwest, I find myself drawn to the form of Carlisle United, 2 points off the top after five league wins in six, including the last four. Now, I know you haven't played them yet. I think you've got that one coming up in early January. I'm not expecting you to. You have. Well, if you've memorised your fixtures for the next month, that's more than a lot of coaches do.
I just look for all the long trips, Clem.
Do you? Is that what you do? You monitor those first to just see where you're going to need to rest up in advance and
basically,
you know,
yeah,
when you're going to be out of the loop at home for a few days.
Yeah.
Well, that's the longest of all. I tell you what, though, once you get on a roll in a division and start putting a run like that together, and you see yourself out of mid-table into the playoff places, move through the playoff places into the automatic places, and then you've got the scent of top spot in your nostrils. I mean, yeah, that creates one heck of a confidence, doesn't it?
Oh, no doubt. You know, it is about momentum. I think, again, we've spoke about the amount of games that are being played, but once you get on that roll, you just want them to keep coming and coming and coming. And, you know, listen, they've had, you know, Bradford recently who have been struggling. They've had Stevenage, who they dispatched comfortably, you know, big win against Salford, you know, one of the most fancy teams in the league. So it just goes to show they're on a real good roll at the moment. And, you know, as you say, once you get that little scent of that we could actually do something here, sometimes it can just snowball. That momentum really carries on, and they're certainly a team in, you know, real form at the moment. Hopefully they slow down a little bit before we play.
Use of the word scent, I think, there from both of us reminds me I need to do a little bit of Christmas shopping. Keep my voice down in case Mrs. Clem is listening, but I do just need to get online when we finish this and just press go. I need to get her something, despite the fact I've been staring at her solidly for the last 6 months. Well, not quite, but, you know. Opposite end of the scale, Barrow dispensed with the services of David Dunn, sacked after 2 wins in 17 in the league and losing the last 4. Bradford City, who you mentioned, struggling. Stuart McCall, sacked after 3 wins in 16, losing the last 5. And just 3 weeks after signing a new contract extension. But I suppose the sort of positive glimmer we can offer both of those clubs is what's happened to Southend United in the last week. 2 consecutive weeks, they've doubled their points tally in 4 days. And I'd like to congratulate myself because you and I have been chatting for about 15 minutes at this point, and it's the first time I've mentioned your age, your weary legs, etc., etc. But I love the story of Greg Holford, who scored one of the goals for them in their second win. 18 months without a club, signed a 1-month contract after Southend's transfer embargo was lifted, and gets a goal 11 minutes after coming off the bench. I mean, you know, that he from the despair of thinking he's gone and his time in the professional game is over, to making an impact like that. Wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah, massive credit to him, really. I think it can be a real difficult time, particularly at that age when you're out of contract, and someone who's had a good a career as he has, you know, to still have that desire to want to play. And again, for me, it's about playing. You know, you get to a point where it's not about the money. You know, it's not about the glitz and the glamour. It's about loving going out there and playing football matches. And, you know, I'm just glad that he's not only got back into, you know, the Football League, but also to go and make an impact and get a goal is, you know, a huge testament to him. He's got a few years left in him, though, Clem. He's only 36, mate. So, you know, mate, I'll give him a message and tell him he's got a few good years left in him. But yeah, great to see. And
he's going to have to go some to keep up with you, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know about that, Clem. I don't know about that. He's, again, I'd take 36 over 39 any day of the week.
So, Barrow, who we've just been discussing, under Rob Kelly as interim manager at home to Cheltenham. Bradford, with academy coaches Mark Truman and Connor Sellers in charge, entertain Cambridge. We have got 4th against 2nd as Forest Green, just 3 defeats all season, entertain Carlisle. Southend, see if they can make it 3 in a row with a trip to Mansfield. Newport look to bounce back at home to Oldham, and Stevenage, Exeter postponed for those COVID reasons. Where are you with your Christmas plans? Are you so immersed in football you don't even think of it? You leave it to Mrs. McEnough, sorting the kids out, all that kind of stuff, making sure the chimney is unblocked and things? Or have you managed to do a few bits and pieces?
No, I'm notoriously terrible.
Mate.
I'm a bit of a... It used to be a Scrooge, now it's a Grinch. It's such a busy time for us, Clem. I've got to be honest, it's quite a hard time of year because everyone else generally, apart from when we're having a pandemic around the world, is off celebrating, having fun, you know, drinking, eating more than they normally would. And for us, it's the busiest time of the year. So before I had my children, I've got to say, I don't know how my missus put up with me because I didn't really have a Christmas at all. Since the kids have come along, I think I've relaxed a little bit more, and obviously, you know, you try and have a good time for them. But no, in terms of doing all the Christmas shopping and stuff, I'm lucky. She all I've got to do is sort her out. She does the rest of the family. So I better not mess that one up.
You better not mess that one up. Otherwise, our chances of getting you on here again will be over because Mrs. M will be reclaiming the kitchen. Actually, just on that point, is it hard to relax? You know, Christmas film on might put you in the sort of spirit of Christmas. Even a cantankerous devil like you might sort of get in Christmas spirit. Is it hard to do that stuff because you're frightened of letting your guard down?
I wouldn't say to relax. I think more to do with, you know, listen, I've had Christmas dinners where I'm thinking, oh, can I have that extra roast potato or that bit of Christmas pudding because I've got to go and run around on Boxing Day, or, you know, we've travelled on Christmas night, which was... That was not great. You know, you're sitting down having your meal, just counting the time till you've got to go and train and travel. And again, listen, it's a one small part, you know, in terms of the negative side of the game. Of course, I wouldn't change anything. You know, we're very lucky. We're blessed to be able to do what we're doing. But it can be a difficult time. You know, again, people away from their families, you know, working. So, you know, you got to take the rough with the smooth. But yeah, certainly as I've got older, I've tried to enjoy it a little bit more, and you know, the kids certainly help in that respect.
I mean, your roast potatoes, are we talking goose fat, duck fat, just a nice olive oil? Do you parboil, then fluff them up, and then sort of dip them and put them in? I mean, what do you know? What's your recipe for roast potatoes, Chubby?
I've got to be honest, Clem, that's way too much detail for me. I just turn up and they're on the table. I'd leave that to the missus and my mum, who are normally doing all the hard work on Christmas Day. So, I wouldn't be on here giving any tips on cooking Christmas dinner, that's for sure.
Well, we don't get you on for your cookery tips, actually, Joby. We get you on because we love your company and we love your fantastic insights. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Nice one, Clem. You too. Take care. Have a good Christmas, everyone.
That's it for another week. A big thank you to Joby McAnuff, Lee Hendry and Michael O'Neill. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do please give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.